there has never been a time in education where we've got everything down pat, right? There's never been a time that we're like, oh, we figured it out, we fixed education, right? And it's not that education is broken, but we can always get better. And that's something that's really important to me.
Hey, everybody, and thanks for tuning in to this week's podcast on Leading Through Unprecedented Times. With me for this episode, so excited to have George Kuros, my good friend. George, you are somebody that works with educators around the world, but take a moment, if you would, to introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Tom, for having me. It's awesome. I've been watching the series and really great to learn from the superintendents and leaders that have been sharing. A little bit about me. My name is George Kuros. I'm from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Taught basically every grade from kindergarten to grade 12, been a vice principal, worked in central office for 8 years. And one of the things that I get to do that's really powerful is I actually work with school districts all over the world. And part of what's really powerful about that is I get to share ideas and thoughts with them. But for me, I'm a voracious learner and I learn a ton from these organizations as I'm, you know, immersed in them and get to see and give them some ideas based on some of the things I'm seeing. So I'm always learning stuff and I try to share that in my blogs and my books and everything I do. So yeah, it's been a really incredible journey and I've learned and grown a ton because of connections to people listening to this podcast and yourself, Tom.
Yeah, thanks, George. You know, and throughout the podcast, here we are in season two, and we've spent so much time talking to superintendents and principals about the reality, about their world. You get to back that up, have a bit of a higher view because you're working with so many different places across the world that have undergone this pandemic. You know, we're still in the midst of it, taking a look. But talk about, if you would, what do you think some of the realizations that you've seen educators have as we reflect on the close of last school year? What are you seeing across the board?
I think really the focus on, and something that you and I have been talking about forever, and I think is really the core of what we do in education, is that focus on relationships. And we were having a conversation with a mutual friend, Weston Kieschnick, and he said something to me that I thought was really interesting, is that if this happened in September, this would be way harder than if it happened in March, because, you know, we built relationships with our students, we had connections with them, whether it was elementary or the high school level. And so what you're seeing is that going around, especially school leaders, that connection, because we know that whatever is happening in our world, there's always uncertainty, but with COVID and all these things that are happening, there's so much uncertainty. You have to be able to trust the people you're working with, that they actually have the best interests of the educators to make sure that we create the best opportunities for our kids. And so that relationship piece has been something that, you know, people are talking about all of these plans, all these different things, and uncertainty. If you don't have trust, you won't be able to lead forward.
So let's take that, and I completely agree. You know, here we are. Fortunately, they had a good three quarters of the year prior to now, but here we are in the summer looking towards next school year with lots of uncertainty. Put yourself back in the shoes of being a teacher, being a principal, as we both were. What would you be doing to build those relationships, to build those trust? You know, if we have to do it remotely to start the year, what would that look like if you were in those shoes?
Yeah, so one of the conversations I've been having with a lot of schools and districts is about that exact question. It was like, what happens if we're, for example, we're in a blended setting? What if it happens if we're on a totally like virtual setting where kids are not actually checking into schools? And so some of the people that I've been working with, what they're doing is they're doing looping. So for example, if you're a grade two student and you're going into grade three, they actually are trying to keep that connection between the grade two and the grade three teacher, because they have that connection too. And I actually, as a teacher, one of the things that I did when I was teaching middle school is I actually looped with a certain group of students for three straight years. And the relationships that you have with the kids, and this is actually really important, the relationships that you have with the families are really powerful, because you get to know them on a totally different level, and you have built that trust. And knowing that you're going to actually be with them for an extended amount of time makes you ensure that you do have good relationships. Because if you started off bad in year one and you have three more years to go, good luck. And so that's been one of the strategies. But then you have like kids transitioning from, you know, school A to school B because they're different grade levels or whatever. And so you're also seeing there's kind of like this hybrid model of connection, right? Where you have a teacher specific or that is known by the kids, and they're actually going in and they're actually connecting and building some of those relationships through that process. But I also think you have to look at, for example, some of the things that virtual academies do. I've been working with several of those spaces too, and like, how do they actually get to know their kids and kind of go through the space, because they've actually not looped, they've not done these things. They have basically kids go from grade to grade to grade and meet new teachers. So I think part of it is understanding that you cannot jump right into the content, and you shouldn't do that in any setting. But really, it's more important than ever is that you're really spending time to get to know your students, who they are. And that could be done in a virtual setting, but also understanding that you have to create a community where students are also getting to know one another in those spaces. It's not just about the teacher and the kids getting to know each other. It's about that whole community connecting, because when you go through that process, and this is what I've seen from schools doing this all over and over, is when you go through that process of the students connecting with one another, then it's much easier as a teacher, because it's not solely dependent upon the effectiveness of the teacher, which is obviously important, but it's actually the community that we've created.
Yeah, so well said. You know, one of the things, you get to do so much professional learning literally around the world. I'm sure that you've seen great models, great leadership, stepped into great things, and I'm sure you've seen some as well where you've said probably that needs to shift a bit or a lot. So when we talk about professional learning, you know, districts have been really shifting their practices over the past 4 or 5 years a lot, but in the same sense, in the past couple of months, they've been forced to. It's 100% virtual now, and so on and so forth. So as we move forward around professional learning, what recommendations would you give to school and district leaders to support teachers and whatever the shift ends up looking like?
Yeah, I think for me, one of the biggest things that I've always had an issue with in professional learning, and never really had the opportunity to solve it until I actually led the professional learning, was the amount of information we try to pack in. And we feel that if we're not, like, you know, learning this and then moving from this point, you know, quickly from like this session to this session to this session, that we're almost wasting time. And when you actually ask educators a lot of times, and we both do conferences all over the world, you ask them, what was the best part of the conference? And many times they'll say, oh, the conversations in the hallway. Like, that was the best. Just being able to talk to other, you know, colleagues and kind of dig it in. And so I think it's really meaningful when we intentionally put that time into our professional learning days, and that we actually give people. And so one of the things that I do, and I actually learned this when I was in Australia, because the first time I was there, I actually did a keynote, and then they said, hey, we're going to take like a 30-minute tea break between. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like 30 minutes? Like, what are we going to do for 30 minutes, right? And what I noticed is that people were talking to each other. People were having conversations. People were, you know, digging into the learning. I'm like, oh, this is really nice. But as opposed to like the 10 minutes we go to, you know, get the bathroom as quick as possible. Hopefully there's not a line because everyone's got at the same time. We get our quick snack, whatever, and then we go to the next session. And we actually know that's a really bad model from, you know, how many high schools are. It's like class, 5-minute break, next class, 10-minute break, next class. And so why do we actually replicate that when we have so much, you know, power to actually do something different immediately in those professional learning days? So it actually encouraged people to, you know, do some content, but allow for people to dig deep into it. And that actually means creating time for connection, for actually creating stuff during that time, because it's better to know things deep than to know a bunch of things on a very surface level.
Yeah. So George, I want to talk about it. You know, your last two books, you've got Innovator's Mindset, which has sold like a billion copies, and Inside, you know, Innovate Inside the Box, yeah, you know, which another bestseller. When you talk so much about mindset and taking the constraints that we normally have and sometimes just busting out of them and doing what you need to do for kids. So talk to us about, when we look at those pieces, how do people shift their mindset? What's the mindset they need so that their kids can thrive in whatever environment we have moving forward?
Yeah, and the Innovator's Mindset, which, you know, I'm most well known for, and Innovate Inside the Box is a follow-up kind of to really focus on like strategies for teachers on things they could do in the classrooms. And Innovator's Mindset is more for administrators. It's based on Carol Dweck's work, which I'm sure everyone listening to this is familiar with. She talks about fixing growth mindset. And I think growth mindset is really crucial, but I think it's actually not enough. And so when we talk about the innovator's mindset. It's not just simply having this belief that we can learn and do new things. It's actually the belief that we can only learn, but we can create new things from our learning. So like just, you know, emulated in our conversations today, me seeing things that are happening in districts around the world. Hey, they're really great ideas and they work perfectly for that district. But how do I take those things and bring them back to my work, to bring them back to the other districts and say, hey, here's this idea. Here's something I've seen, but here's the tweak. Here's the way I would do it a little bit different here in this process. And I think that when you look at this, how it trickles down into the classroom, the idea of that, you know, we want our kids to learn math, obviously, but I actually want our kids to be able to do something with the math they have learned, which it takes it to a whole different level. Because when we talk about our learning, we often talk about how kids regurgitate something on a test. But I actually talk about like, what is a kid purposely doing with information? What are they sharing? But if you really want to emulate that, we have to create that same mentality of ourselves as educators, because we go to like PD days or we buy a program and we just do it as is. And we take away the wisdom and experience from our educators, as opposed to saying like, here is this idea. What? How does this apply to our context? How can we make this better? How can create something different? So if we want that really to happen with our kids, it is imperative that we model that as educators, that we go beyond that growth mindset to that innovator's mindset. Because in a world where basically nobody cares what you know, they only care about what you can do with what you know, it's a Thomas Friedman quote, this is more important than ever.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. So let me ask you this, because I also know that you're a dad and you've got a precious little girl that'll be hitting school age not too far from now. You know, when we get to the other side of this pandemic and we look back and we can reflect, what's your highest hope on some of the changes that you'd like to see across the board?
Well, I don't know if I'd say there are changes. I just would wish they would be the norm. And I think because a lot of what I'd share right now is going to, it happens already in many schools and organizations, but I would like to know that my daughter, and we have a daughter come along right away, would have the same experiences, that when they walked into a school, not just a classroom, but a school, they would feel welcome and appreciated, that they would actually see reflections of themselves on the walls. Like if you look at many schools, one of the things that you notice often when you walk in, and this is one of the benefits that I have of being able to speak and travel, is I can tell, is this school more about the adults or more about the kids? So if I actually see the picture of every single principal that's ever served in that school, already it's about the adults, right? And maybe it's not, but that's what it's actually insinuating to the kids. But when I see student artwork, when I see, you know, pictures of kids in that building right now, and one of the schools that actually is in my home city, and I'm really proud to say that, Jasper Place in Edmonton, Alberta. I actually was a basketball referee for years, and I would go there, and you would see all of this incredible student creations, and just, it was so powerful. And the design, you wouldn't know if it was like an actual professional designer who did this. And so I actually went, and I said, who's doing this for you? Like, this is incredible, because I want to replicate this for my school. I said, it was actually our students. And that was really powerful to kind of see this. So kind of when my daughter walks in, I want her seeing reflected in that space. And, you know, many of the things that we share from yesteryear don't reflect our current students, and they don't connect with them at all. But the other thing too is that, you know, will schools, classrooms, will they look at what she can do, or will they focus solely on what she can't do, her deficits? And I think really building on strengths, building on what she does well, is really important. And this is not only what I hope for my daughter, but what we do as, you know, a system, what we do, you know, as leaders. And you'll see, for example, this happens all the time. We wonder why educators are exhausted and they're checking out of the profession, but sometimes we have a low score in math, and then all of a sudden everything is focused on how are we going to fix the math scores? How are we going to do this? How are we going to do this? But our language arts scores are really high. The question we should be asking is, what are we doing so well here? Like, how do we actually bring that to all areas and actually starting there? Because you'll hear it from the media, you'll hear it from superintendents, you'll hear it from the province, you'll hear it from the parents. And so we really need to take ownership and make sure that we focus on those strengths. But the last thing that I share, and I share this all the time, is that if she were to miss a day of school, would she feel her contributions were sorely missed? Because if you feel you have ownership in that classroom, if you feel you're actually a really important part of that space that it is necessary for you to be there or the class will not be as successful. That's something every kid should, you know, feel when they walk into those classrooms. But sometimes they're just kind of there to be there to do what they have to do to get their check and to move on. And so I think those things are really important for, and I, you know, of course I want this for my daughter, but I want this for every single kid in education. That to me, I don't want to fight for something only for my daughter. It's all about every kid having access, because if only my daughter gets this, she doesn't benefit from the contributions from the other kids in the classrooms as well.
Yeah, so well said. I couldn't agree more. Let me hit the topic of fear for a minute. You know, in the words of Zig Ziglar, fear can mean we forget everything and run, or we face everything and rise. And, you know, fear is just so rampant in our world right now. And as you're working with so many different places, you see it front and center. We can't do that because of budget. We can't do that because we don't have enough staff. We can't do that because of our community. We can't do that because our kids are too whatever. And so how do educators, how do school and district leaders in particular work through fear? What recommendations would you give?
Well, we actually talk about fear and risk, and there's a connection to the two, because a lot of times our fear holds us back from taking risks. And so I've actually tried to take risk and make it, you know, much more accessible, much more easier to take. And all I talk about is risk is moving from a comfortable average in pursuit of an unknown better. So if we think about some of the things that we do in our personal lives, right? So for example, everyone's listening has probably, and probably this is true with you and I, is that we've all stayed in relationship like way too long. And so why is that, right? And often it's because that's what we know. We feel comfortable. And then we look back years later and we think like, why didn't I leave earlier? Why didn't I do this, right? And we're not saying anyone's a bad person or anything like that, but we sometimes stay in positions that, you know, are not helpful to us. But the same thing happens in education, is that sometimes we will stick with things because we know them, but they might not be benefiting kids. And they might not actually be benefiting, you know, the educators. And so we have to be comfortable. Now, if you're doing something that's great, working for kids, knocking on the park, even though I talk about innovation, we want to continue that. But there's no practice that we do the exact same way that works benefit, like that works well for every single kid done the same way. Every kid is a variable in our classroom. They're all different every year, every single individual. So they all have different needs. So I think really kind of looking at, I actually have a bigger fear of doing things that actually are not beneficial to kids, actually don't help kids, and I'm not preparing them to actually tackle some of the real life problems that they actually have right now, let alone when we talk about the future. So if you look at those two things, I'd rather take risks and try new things to help kids move forward, as opposed to sticking with something that doesn't work with our kids, because I actually have more fear about that.
Yeah, really well said. Enjoyed that. So one more final piece for you. You know, working with school and district leaders truly around the world, what's a piece of advice that you have? There's so many pieces of uncertainty. There's all this fear out there. They're worried about the things that are in the weeds from schedules and PPE equipment and things that are really, really important stuff. But how do you give a piece of advice, if you could, to those school and district leaders, no matter where they're at, as they look towards next school year?
Yeah, I think it's really important to like give guidance to people and serve them, but to also trust them, right? I think a lot of leaders, you know, they know teachers are looking to them for answers and things like that. And I think part of it, we want to provide some of those things, but we also want to people to feel like, hey, we know we got your back. We're going to support you through this process. There's a lot of unknowns here, but here is something you can count on. We got you. We're going to take care of you. We're going to, you know, be there for you. And I think, like, as we were talking about earlier, Tom, that relationship piece is so crucial. And if you can do all the logistical stuff and you got that all, you know, pointed out and all planned out and beautifully well done, but you don't have relationships, none of that's going to happen. But if you have the relationships and you're still trying to figure out the logistical things, that will be taken care of. You just got to have some trust, not only in yourself, but the people that you have. And that's why those relationships are so crucial. There has never been a time in education where we've got everything down pat, right? There's never been a time that we're like, oh, we figured it out. We fixed education, right? And it's not that education is broken, but we can always get better. And that's something that's really important to me. But really, if you want to help people grow through the process, they got to know that when they take risks, when they try different things, you got their back. And so that relationship piece is so crucial through this whole process.
That's George Kuros, everybody. George, thanks so much for investing the time today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom. Hope you have a wonderful day.